Welcome to Take Notes, S&P Global Ratings Structured Finance Podcast and the credit event of your day. Tune in as your hosts, Jim Manzi and Tom Schopflocker, explore hot topics across the structured finance and global markets.
Hello and welcome to Take Notes. I'm your host, Tom Schopflocker, and with me today is my co-host, Jim Manzi, who's dialing in from Baltimore. We recently attended the ABS East Conference in Miami, which took place between Sunday the 22nd of September and it ended on Tuesday the 24th. And it seems as though every year this conference sets its attendance record. This year there were apparently over 5,000 in attendance, or at least registered, and it felt like they all showed up. And on Sunday, it was a relatively light day, a few panels here and there and some presentations, but the CLO team, our CLO team, was quite active. We had a well-attended lecture given by CLO analysts Bo Trant and Catherine Rautenkrantz, who gave a detailed presentation explaining how it is we analyze CLOs, and they gave a hands-on demonstration of our CDO evaluator. Now, CLOs aren't a major theme at the ABSD's conference, but there certainly was one panel devoted to it. Why don't you tell us more about what was going on in that space?
So yes, Tom, thanks. CLOs have their own dedicated conferences throughout the year, but this one, there definitely was, like you say, a few panels and some general interest in the topic. I guess the main topic we keep hearing about is the corporate ratings and the record amount of B- exposure in CLOs. And this plays into, of course, the CCC loan buckets, which are not outsized as yet, but I think apparently with many market participants factoring in a recession, there's of course the risk that these B- become CCCs and start to impact the cash flows within the deal. And then, of course, some of the other perennial topics about loan and CLO documentation were covered. Covlite, EBITDA add backs, we heard all the buzzwords. Besides CLO, one area of interest during the conference was whole business. So, Tom, I guess I'll kick it back to you and what you saw from that sector.
Yeah, starting bright and early Monday morning, S&P Global Ratings hosted a roundtable breakfast, and there were lots of people who showed up to hear Kate Scanlon moderate and her team speak about whole business securitization. And unlike in the past, it was focused entirely on that subsector because, as you point out, Jim, there is a lot of interest in whole business. And the analysts spoke about the history of the sector, how we surveil the rated deals, what's in store for the future. And there was also a panel which was moderated by ABS analyst Jesse Sable, where the panelists spoke about how they spoke about the risks of non-restaurant whole business issuers, refi options that are available to the issuers whose notes are approaching their anticipated repayment dates, how the current rate environment is impacting investor interest in whole business. And the interesting question, of course, is why is there such renewed interest or why everybody cares about whole business at this stage? Jim, what do you think?
Well, I think that last point about how the current rate environment is impacting investor interest is the key, right? This is an area with some $8 billion of issuance year to date. For an esoteric ABS, sector or subsector, that's quite a bit. And that's up from $7 billion for full year 2018. And four of the deals this year were over $1 billion. So you have some large liquid deals with good yields and low investment grade ratings. I think for investors to become if they become comfortable with the sector, it's an attractive area. And I think speaking of attractive areas, I think if not the most discussed topic or the most discussed sector was non-QM RMBS. We're hearing about this from investors. Like I said, it was one of the key topics of the conference in my view. And I guess, Tom, that's your area, having just published a paper on it and and hosting a discussion. So I guess what were some of the key takeaways from our event?
Yeah, it was a major theme at the conference, which is nice because, of course, in years past, there wasn't a whole lot in the way of RMBS issuance, and the focus was more on ABS. But it looks like there, with a forecast $100 billion of non-agency RMBS this year, there's certainly a lot of interest in the sector, and in particular, non-QM sector, which is the fastest growing of the non-agency RMBS subsectors. And we forecast $25 billion in issuance by year-end 2019. And like you said, we recently wrote a paper called Non-QM's Meteoric Rise is Leading the Private Label Comeback. And so, yes, at sometime around lunch on the Monday, we had a roundtable which was focused entirely on non-QM. So similar to the esoteric ABS breakfast that morning, we just focused on one asset class because that's what people wanted to hear about. I think we hit all the right notes. There were many people who were curious about the fast prepayment rates and what's driving them. People wanted to know about performance, which has generally been very good, largely because of the strong economic environment, the continued housing price appreciation, which is slowing, but is still there, and there are affordability challenges. Also, there's the various different subtypes that people are curious about, like what is non-QM? You know, it's not one thing. There's a broad credit spectrum that you see, and you also have, well, technically not really loans that are certainly you have loans that are outside the QM world, these so-called investor loans, which are QM exempt, but which are put inside non-QM deals, sometimes exclusively. We call these DSCR loans, which are very interesting to people. And we also wrote a paper on that, which is available on our website, like all the papers that we're going to talk about today. We know that we, like I say, hit all the right notes, because when I went to the RMBS panel, they spoke exclusively about non-QM and essentially touched upon all the same themes that we did.
So one area I heard was kind of light on panels, despite its outsized issuance, is autos. And I know our analyst, Amy Martin, hosted an hour-long panel on that topic. Was it the usual, most people wanted to hear about subprime? Was there some prime? I know you were there. What were the...
Right. I mean, this was a more scripted, not a traditional round table. It was more of a lecture, and it was packed to the hilt. It was standing room only. I say that literally standing room only. And when Amy asked at the outset what people wanted to hear about, she asked who wanted to hear about floor plan or who wanted to hear about prime, and you know, one or two hands went up here and there. And then she said jokingly, well, I don't suppose anybody actually wants to hear about subprime. And everybody laughed, of course, because that's all anybody wanted to hear about, it seems. So a great deal of time was devoted to talking about the space, what performance was like, how we analyze it. Ken Martins took the lead on that, and I think it went very well. People got what they came for.
Very good. So I guess three other topics that we hear a lot about are LIBOR, ESG, and blockchain, and they've all become kind of buzzwords in their own right in structured finance. So I guess I'll start with the LIBOR panel. And one of the more interesting takeaways, I guess, was that the UK has already priced some $17 billion of structured finance issuance with an alternative rate. In this case, it's SONIA, the sterling overnight rate. And of course, we haven't yet had a structured finance issuance using SOFR, which is, probably the heir apparent to LIBOR here. And of course, SOFR also had a recent spike in the repo markets. But panelists were kind of sanguine on that topic because they use an average or a compounded average to calculate the interest payments, and it was only one night. So there was a lot of that talk. With LIBOR, there's always, it seems, many want this transition to happen a little bit faster, and there seems to be some frustration that there were still issuances in LIBOR. But, you know, on the whole, progress is being made, and it was, I think, a largely positive panel. ESG, I guess, Tom, do you want to take that one?
Well, I'll talk a little bit about it. There was an ESG panel, with ESG standing, of course, for environmental, social, and governance. And this is a hot topic these days. It looks like it's pervading many different asset classes. There, you hear about ESG in CLOs. You hear about social covered bonds. It can be an RMBS, etc. So it was definitely a theme, and it was explicitly addressed in one panel that our own S&P Global Ratings analyst, Ildi Zielenk, spoke on. And one of the points that she drove home, though, as a ratings analyst, was that one can't conflate credit ratings with a green collateral pool, because it's quite possible that you have green assets, but because of structuring problems, you may not have good credit ratings on the bonds that are issued. Jim, what did you take away from the ESG buzz at the conference?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the other interesting points that that Ildi made was that this analysis is really nothing new, even though, you know, of course, it's in recent years that ESG has become a big buzzword and topic. In some cases, especially the G part, the governance has always been, you know, a part of that, like a scheme that's been analyzed and has figured into credit ratings for a long time. And I guess the last of the three that I brought up, Tom, is something that you've published a paper on in the past, which was blockchain. Do you want to give some color on that?
Sure. Yeah, we published our blockchain paper. That was last February, which we presented at the SFIG Vegas conference. But it's still relevant, of course, because this is truly a nascent field. And blockchain as a technology, people often know it from cryptocurrencies, right? Because it forms part of the backbone of how Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies can function. But it has applications in securitization. And one of the pioneers in this, a guy called Mike Cagney, who works for Figure, he was a keynote speaker, and he was explaining how this works. And it was a somewhat technical speech, but he laid things out reasonably clearly and explained what some of the savings could be. And a couple of the numbers that I took away were savings in origination costs. He claimed that there could be 65 basis points reduction in origination costs if one securitizes on a blockchain, and that there could be 20 basis points reduction in the costs of servicing if one uses a blockchain. Directly after Mike Cagney gave his keynote speech, there was a panel that dealt with digital ledger technology, which is, I think, really just another word for blockchain. And it was somewhat less technical, but again, emphasized the benefits, the potential benefits of doing a securitization on a blockchain. And a couple of the things that they mentioned there, in addition to cost savings, are the fact that you could do real-time performance monitoring. So this would be very interesting for surveillance. You'd know immediately when assets were underperforming, and you could acquire your data in real time as well. So these are certainly advantages from, well, the perspective of all the players who are involved in a securitization.
Very good. So I think the last thing we can cover is the macro topic. The keynote speakers, although it was a Q&A format, was Mohamed Alarian. And Dr. Alarian covered a very wide range of topics and was also very funny. He had the audience laughing and thinking at the same time. And my key takeaway from that was, you know, he thought the biggest risk faced by the financial markets is kind of an overestimation of the available liquidity, which also plays into that aforementioned event in the repo market. He was, however, a bit more upbeat about the economy and odds of recession, while there was a polling question, and I think some two-thirds of the audience believed or, you know, kind of stated their opinion that there would be a recession prior to the end of the second quarter in 2021. I guess he kind of gave that a lower probability of occurrence absent some sort of policy mistake that would seriously stall growth. And I guess in another panel, Tom, our economist, our U.S. chief economist, Beth Ann Bovino, spoke. And I guess, what did you take away from her remarks?
Right. She also believes that the chances are we won't go into recession prior to the election. Like Ellerian, she acknowledges that the underlying economy is quite strong. So when the numbers that she cites, which have gone up from last year, she says that there is now a 30 to 35% chance that we will enter into a recession over the next 12 months, which is, like I say, higher than it was a year ago when it was, I think, 20 to 25% chance. But of course, you know, the flip side of that is that there's a 65 to 70% chance that we won't see a recession by this time next year. She explained that the economy is starting to slow and that while we had 3% growth last year, we'll probably see about 2.5% growth this year and as little as 1.8% growth in 2020. But she did point out that there's some things that could slow it down further. The trade war with China, if this persists, which it could, that could shave off 50 basis points from that growth. And there are other factors, too, that could shave it down, such as problems in Iran and spikes in oil prices. These factors, which are hard to forecast, these could push us down near zero growth or even negative. So this is what's giving rise, I think, to the likelihood of recession over the next 12 months.
Right. And I know she mentioned we've also... the U.S. as a country has become a bit more energy independent, and so the impact of higher oil and gas prices is not quite as severe as in the past. But I think that's a great overview, and we covered a lot of area. So that's about all I have to say about this this conference. I guess if this is a thing, I'd wish us a 1-year podcast anniversary since this was our first one last year.
That's right. So, Jim, thanks for dialing in from Baltimore. It's a rare occasion that we actually get to co-host together. But I'll say for both of us, thanks for joining. This has been Tom Schopflocker and Jim Manzi. Talk to you next time on Take Notes.
To subscribe to Take Notes or to view our analysts' research, go to spratings.com/structuredfinance. Thanks for listening to Take Notes with Jim Manzi and Tom Schopflocker.